Welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast, where we showcase the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything we think we know about food. I'm Anthony Zara, and this episode has been made in partnership with AAK. Now, the pressure on food manufacturers has never been greater. Reduce sugar, cut saturated fat, lower your carbon footprint, use fewer allergens, waste less. And all while consumers still want food that tastes good. In fact, you could argue that's now more important than ever. So how do you take things out without taking away what people love? That's the central question in this episode. And the answer, it turns out, might be that less really can mean more. With me are two fantastic guests from AAK. Jody Spriggs is the company's Customer Innovation Manager. Hello, Jody.
Hi.
And Jonathan Ayres is AAK Sales Director for the UK and Ireland. Hello, Jonathan.
Hello.
Fantastic. Thanks both for coming on the podcast. Okay, look, let's start with this central idea. Jody, less is more. It's simple, but it's quite powerful. What does it mean in the context of today's food industry?
I personally think it means different things to different people and also different things within different categories. And ultimately, it's about being transparent. So you can't necessarily be less in all categories and be all things to all people. So it's about the right approach for the right areas and trying to do the right thing. I think consumers are more savvy now than they've ever been and they see through things. So for me, transparency is the key. So yes, we can take ultra-processed foods out. We can take calories out. We can take saturated fat out. We can take sugar out, but not necessarily all of those, and still the product tastes good, be cost effective, etc. So I think it's about a structured approach and working with our customers to find out what's important to them.
I think if we talk about our role in the global food system, the challenges we have today is that we've got a growing population, we've got a growing need for food, but of course we're not a growing planet. So as an organization, the food supply chain, we have a real obligation to find ways to create more food from less.
Absolutely. Okay. All right. That's a good scene setter then. So let's get into this unpacking this less meaning, because it can mean lots of things. So like you mentioned, Jody, it might mean less sugar or less CO2, fewer allergens, less waste, like I mentioned in the introduction. From your perspective, though, what are manufacturers under the most pressure to reduce at the moment?
I think if you ask the manufacturers directly, they'd probably give you a different answer. But in reality, at this actual moment in time, probably cost, obvious reasons, cost of living, uncertainty, etc. And if not to reduce cost, to at least stop costs from increasing. And it's something we can help with. So we've been speaking to a lot of manufacturers and a lot of retailers to really get a better understanding of what it is they're looking for. So, you know, ideally they would like to reduce everything, make products healthier, and there's lots of initiatives that are happening to do that, HFSS, for example. And, you know, we could help customers take out all UPFs, all additives, and the product would still taste as good. On the negative side, what we would have is a product that didn't have as long shelf life. So you've got more product wastage, so costs going up. So I think, as I said earlier, it's about a balance and doing the right thing in the right area. So, you know, in an ideal world, everyone would go shopping every day or forage for food, and it would be made fresh every day. You know, in reality, you've got three kids and packed lunches to do, and everyone's at work, and you've got, life gets in the way of what would work. So we've got to sort of do what's right in different categories and different areas. So, you know, supermarkets have got their sort of good, better, best range. And what you might do in a better, the better, higher, more expensive products, you wouldn't necessarily do in the lower cost products. Take biscuits for an example. You can go buy a packet of biscuits, you know, for 50p. You can go to a high-end retailer and spend a fiver for sort of 8 biscuits. Very different propositions, very different customers. So we've got to look at everything as an individual and make sure that's been addressed.
And I guess the challenge in some cases is that if you are trying to take things out, you're trying to do that without taking away what consumers love. So how difficult a balancing act is that in reality?
A lot of products, it's relatively easy, and that's where we come in. We had a strap line, fat makes food fabulous, and it really does. But it's about the right fat for the right job in the right product. So we've at AAK have a range of butter replacers. So they were developed to mimic butter. However you would use butter, you would just replace it with a butter replacer. So it's got the same melting curve. The benefits are it's lower in saturated fats. It's got a reduced CO2 footprint. It's a quarter. We've got two versions, a palm and a non-palm version. The non-palm version has got a carbon footprint, the eighth of that of butter. About 25% reduced saturated fat, and it tends to be a lot cheaper than butter. Butter prices do fluctuate. Our price tends to be more consistent. We can replace butter with our butter replacer, save you costs, improve your nutritional profiling, etc. And you can actually literally just take butter out and replace it 100% with the butter replacer. If that feels like a step too far, and you maybe just want a small cost saving, or you can use it in conjunction, so you can still call butter on the pack if that's something that's really important to you. And that can be used in anything, cakes, biscuits, ready meals, sauces, etc. We've got a whole range of recipes where that's been proven. With an added bonus, it's actually vegan, so it's a really good way of making a product that wasn't vegan just by replacing the butter. And that's just one example of the things that we work with our customers on.
And is that one of the, that's almost like the holy grail, I suppose, in a way, isn't it? It does all these different things. And like you say, cost is so prominent at the moment. If actually it costs less as well, I mean, that's got to be top of manufacturer's priority.
Yep. And we get different traction from different customers. And, I mentioned the sort of good, better, best. We're not proposing that customers would replace butter in their all butter premium shortbread, but in their cheaper ranges or, products where it's less obvious. And if you take a cake or a pudding, sticky toffee pudding, it's got three or four, if not more, ingredients that are adding to the flavour, taste, etc., that aren't just functional. Butter gets lost in that, so you can easily replace it, and it's got no detriment whatsoever on the final product from a quality point of view. Because I think you mentioned it at the start. If food doesn't taste good, no one's going to eat it, no one's going to buy it, and that above everything else has to be what comes first, really. We've got products for people to taste where we've tasted them, made with butter, made with butter replacer. Can you taste which is which? Most people know they can't. And I think if you tell someone it's there, people are more likely to look for it. If they just buy it and it happens to be there, they're not missing it because it's designed to taste like butter.
I think from a format perspective as well. So one of the ways which we create different mouthfeels and textures is using flaked fats, using powdered fats in bakery applications. And we can really create some tasty products with some very different eating experiences. Same amount of fat or even less fat sometimes, but creating a very different product.
Are you seeing markets emerge that are like, we made this as a butter replacer and now people prefer this product and now that's what people want?
I'm not certain it's necessarily they prefer it. They're just happy that there's no different. They wouldn't necessarily pick up on it. It's really hard because a lot of, I don't know the percentage off the top of my head, but most people don't read ingredient declarations
whilst
on packaging.
Delivering great so they won't taste, have noticed a change. And flavour. So I guess
what it means.
Okay, brilliant. Well, let's make that concrete then. So
hasn't had a cost increase.
You mentioned, Jodie, about
the
difference in carbon
profile,
footprint between butter
but
and butter replacers.
Anybody
can you talk us through that a bit more? And why is that such a big
opportunity? It's an opportunity because it's something everybody's talking about. And the benefits, sustainability in general is, I think, more prevalent than it ever was. Lower cost for me outweigh any costs, any taste. When I first joined AAK, I almost thought to myself, this product's too good to be true. My background's in bakery, and I just thought, really? And I spent a week using it at home and making products with and without real butter, doing a contrast, and it just does what it says on the tin. It replaces butter really, really well.
Well, we will get to Food Matters Live event in June in a minute, but maybe people can come and try for themselves and see if they can tell any difference and do the taste test. So AAK talk about conscious indulgence. I wonder what that actually looks like in practice. If you could explain that a bit for us.
So from a practical point of view, for me, I think it's about allowing people to eat what are really quite unhealthy products, almost giving them permission to eat them more regularly or making it better. So, you know, as somebody that understands food and has worked with food, you know, if I want to have something really, really indulgent, I'm not thinking about calories or nutrition at all. I just want it to taste really good and be delicious. Not everyone has the same background as I do. I don't necessarily understand. It's about, you know, giving the population, it's about sort of helping the population make healthier choices. So HFSS is a really good example for me. So it's about sort of, you know, basically it's helping the government tackle the obesity crisis by stopping advertising goods where kids would see them, et cetera, et cetera. I'm sure everyone's aware of what it means. But what we've done is, or we've worked with some of our customers to make unhealthy products. I won't say healthy because that is the wrong message, but less unhealthy than they were. So people can indulge more and you know, without necessarily feeling bad about it. That's a very practical level.
Yeah, I think when we talk about indulgence, we're often talking about richness. We're talking strong flavors. We're talking luxurious textures. And the fat systems which are typically needed are animal-based, like butters and creams, which have high saturated fats and high impact to CO2 emissions. But indulgence doesn't need to be this choice between good and bad for health and for the planet. We use our technology to enable the use of plant-based fat systems, which are healthier, with lower calories. We have a much lower environmental impact whilst delivering great taste and flavor. And so I guess in this instance, you can really have your cake and eat it.
Okay, brilliant. Well, look, let's make that concrete then. So you mentioned, Jodie, about the difference in carbon footprint between butter and butter replacers. Can you talk us through that a bit more? And why is that such a big opportunity?
It's an opportunity because it's something everybody's talking about. So sustainability in general is, I think, more prevalent than it ever was. You know, I look back to when I first started at AK nearly 10 years ago, and it was an add-on to people's jobs. We've got a whole team now, and it's one of our sort of pillars of how we work and what we do. It's at the heart of everything. And we've got quite a lot of initiatives in different areas. I mean, AK was a founding member of the RSPO, and you know, to make palm oil more sustainable. And it's something, you know, we're quite passionate about. And we're working with customers and suppliers alike to make sure we carry that on and take it to the next level. You know, one of the AAK is predominantly plant-based. I think 99% of our products are all plant-based. We were plant-based before it became a buzzword, if you like. And that automatically means we have a lower carbon footprint than dairy products. So Jonathan touched on dairy products earlier. You know, a lot of the sort of rich, tasty foods, contain dairy. The plant-based alternatives have a lower CO2 footprint. So I think I mentioned earlier, the butter replacer has a carbon footprint a quarter of that of butter, and the non-palm version, which contains shea, is an eighth of that. So by literally taking butter out and replacing it with butter replacer, you've made a massive sort of dent into your carbon footprint. And if you know, product manufacturers are using a decent amount of butter and they replace it, it's a really quick and easy way of doing that. So yeah, it's as easy as that, really.
Look, when it comes to healthy indulgence, are we seeing consumers being more demanding in this area? I mean, what are some of the biggest nutritional challenges that manufacturers are trying to solve?
So we've talked quite a bit about HFSS, but that really is a big part of the requests which we receive. The traffic light labeling system as well is a huge driver of the formulation improvement requests which come from the industry. And I think often there's this perception that when you reduce the calories with lower sugars and fats, that must result in a less indulgent product. And that really doesn't have to be the case. We've worked very closely with many of our customers to develop HFSS compliant cookies, nutrition bars, biscuits, snacks. If we put them on the table here, I don't think we would be able to tell the difference between them. And often these products are They offer improved sustainability. There's longer shelf life and likely at a reduced price. We haven't mentioned GLP-1 yet. We've seen a major trend in the introduction of products which are specifically geared towards GLP-1 users with high protein and high nutrition density. And it's really important that we get the right fats into these products. So we've been working with a number of customers to help ensure that they're using the best fats available for these applications.
Lovely. Okay. So we know that reducing sugar, calories or saturated fats isn't necessarily straightforward. And normally there's you know, you can often come up against knock-on effects. What are some of the biggest challenges around that, Jodie?
The main challenge for everything is taste. If products don't taste good, then literally, you know, people won't buy them. They might buy them to start with, but they won't repeat purchase. So that's the biggest thing. And I think, you know, by doing the application work that Jonathan talked about and inviting customers to come and try it, we demonstrate that actually that there is no problem. So and I think, you know, Jonathan touched on GLP-1. I think with the introduction of that, or the increase in that, shall we say, the sort of looking into diet in more detail, I think people have realised that actually fat's not the demon it maybe once was, and it's an integral part of people's, or should be an integral part of people's diet. You know, you need a certain amount of fat in your diet. So it's about, we keep saying it, the right fat for the right job. So, you know, we've worked with customers and they, you know, they've put a liquid fat into a product, but when it cooks, but they've cooked the product, it's really greasy, for example. So, if, you know, we've helped them, like, we've got emulsions or we've got flake fats or powdered fats. By using those, they can, you know, they've often got a lower saturated fat level and they can use it in a lower amount. So in conjunction, you've made the product healthier, but actually it tastes better than it did when it had, you know, the liquid fat in. And we work across all categories, you know, in all areas. So we've got experts in all of those to help our customers do that.
Brilliant. Okay. It's not just about the end product, though, is it? So you also talk about less downtime, less waste, more efficiency. So how important are those sort of operational gains, I guess, for food manufacturers?
So I've got a background in running and optimizing food factories, so I'm acutely aware of some of the costs and some of the challenges of when a factory's not operating or is inefficient and producing excess waste. Food factories are typically running at thousands, sometimes tens and hundreds of thousands of tons per year. So even tiny percentage improvements can have a huge impact in terms of the cost of those lines. Thinking about confectionery lines, unplanned downtime is commonly coming from things like bloom, viscosity challenges, fat crystallization, instability, and maybe retempering challenges. So, and these are typically incurred at changeovers or during process interruptions. So, our customers tell us that often these process instabilities and rework periods of time can account for 20 to 30% of the unplanned downtime on these manufacturing lines. So at a huge cost, right? So we see this as an opportunity, and we've developed some solutions which are designed to help our customers navigate these challenges. We've recently released a CBE product, EN10. And that was developed to support customers in improving line performance. So increasing the processing window. It's designed to be more tolerant to temperature fluctuations versus cocoa butter heavy recipes. And this really helps our customers reduce line stoppages, which are typically caused by thermal deviations on the startups or the slowdowns. We've had some really good feedback from the customers. We've seen improved tempering robustness, so more stable crystallization behavior, which reduces the retempering frequency, reduces the off-spec startup waste, and then subsequent operator intervention. And it's really helped the customers reduce the number of quality-related stops. So reduced incidence of fat bloom or challenges with demolding the product or quality issues with the sort of the snap and the texture of the product. So it's a great product, which we really designed from the perspective of supporting our customers, improving their efficiency of their lines, and of course, in improving the cost base of the product manufacturing.
So I was going to say, we've also got solutions where people would maybe been using box fats. We've got like semi-solid options, so they come in bulk. So you know, you've got pallets of cardboard where the bulk options don't have that. So you're reducing, like literally physically reducing packaging waste. And that's, you know, that goes a long way to help reduce costs as well.
Yeah. And all of this goes back to what you were saying, Jody, earlier about cost just being so prominent at the moment, and I think it is we know it is for consumers as well. So how's that playing into the formulations you're seeing manufacturers want?
For sure, in the current climate, prices are a significant consideration. We'll feel it, right? And I think even before the Iran conflict, the whole value chain has been under constant cost and price pressure. So what have we seen? We've seen a huge pressure with the brands and the growth of private label. So the focus has been on supporting the brands to continually differentiate, supporting the private label and contract manufacturers with solutions which are tailored to their needs. Consumers want the same great taste, the same consumption experience, clean label as well, and the same or lower price. So using our co-development approach, we've been partnering with our customers to value engineer and optimize their products. In the UK and Ireland, we do this at our innovation center up in Hull. And in many cases, we've taken products and we've improved the performance, such as shelf life. And we managed to maintain the flavor and texture and improve the sustainability with a plant-based alternative fat system. And often, again, we see that at a reduced price level.
Maybe, Jonathan, we could talk a bit about cocoa alternatives. So the issues with supply have been pretty well documented, I think. How do you think the industry is responding?
So sales of chocolate globally, it's about, give or take, 11 million tons and growing rapidly. And there's a structural gap between the demand and the availability of cocoa. Cocoa supply is under real pressure. So climate change, disease, aging trees, a huge reliance on West Africa, and that's driven extreme volatility and record prices over the last few years. What we've seen in from the industry isn't it just a sort of a wait and hope approach. We've actively seen customers diversifying away from 100% cocoa dependency and de-risking, improving the sustainability of the supply chain. So we've seen the big manufacturers selectively exploring alternatives in terms of the fat systems and alternatives to the cocoa, such as from precision fermented crops to reduce reliance on the cocoa supply chain. And what's been quite interesting was when the cocoa prices were at record highs, we saw a lot of manufacturers moving forward with projects to reduce reliance on cocoa. Now that the cocoa prices have lowered, we're not seeing that shift back to cocoa, which suggests that the alternatives to cocoa are here to stay. They're in the mainstream. They're going to be here for a long time. Price-wise, the long-term outlook for cocoa remains very volatile and trending in an upward direction from most of the perspectives which we hear. On top of this, cocoa supply chains have also got well-documented challenges with human rights, most notably child labor and extreme poverty, where the workers don't receive a fair deal. And we're very proud of a program which we have in West Africa known as Kolo Nafaso, which we launched in 2009. So we're buying shea kernels directly from organized women's groups, eliminating any price distortion from intermediaries. AAK then provides a guaranteed market outlet, and the women receive fair market prices. We offer interest-free pre-financing and volume and quality-based bonuses to, chosen by the individuals themselves.
Brilliant. Yeah, we actually made a podcast about that with you guys last year. So if anyone's interested in getting a bit more detail on that program, just search for Food Matters Live AAK and it'll be one of the episodes that pop up. Okay, look, when you're working with manufacturers today, look, we've spoken about cost and cost being one of the main concerns, but you know, there is also sustainability, health, functionality. I wonder, you know, does cost just stand out as the main priority, or are they sort of all amalgamated now and almost impossible to separate from each other?
Again, as I think Jody said earlier, it's different customers have different needs, right? Depending on their segment, depending on their specific positioning. But sustainability is consistently towards the top of the agenda for most of our customers. And we're obviously well positioned to support this, whether it's reformulating their products for CO2 reduction, whether it's overall CO2 reduction in the supply chain, or future-proofing, you know, with compliance topic. Health and functionality is also high on the agenda, and we're partnering with companies to facilitate these improvements to their products. And I think there's often a misconception in terms of the scale of the impact which oils and fats can have in the formulation of and performance of products. So, for example, we are, you know, when you're taking out, we're reducing the fats and the sugar to comply with HFSS, whether you are using a fat system to improve the mouthfeel and the sensation of indulgence in the product, whether we're helping to improve the shelf life of products. So, for example, using barrier fats, which help manage the migration of moisture. So we use technology to help our customers navigate some of these challenges. And again, often because we're migrating from animal fats to plant-based fats, we often take out a lot of that volatility around on the costs that we see with animal originated fats. So we use technology to help with that.
Excellent. Look, ultimately all of this has to make commercial sense. Where are you seeing the strongest return on investment when companies embrace this less is more approach?
Like I said earlier, I think it's very different for different companies and different products. But what a lot of our customers are doing is they're almost, you know, what I would call going back to basics. So they're looking at recipes, you know, recipes sort of evolve over time and people come and go at companies and put their own slant on it. So we're asked to go and help manufacturers look at recipes. And we've obviously got to be very diplomatic because they own those recipes and they're someone's, you know, little baby, etc. But often, you know, there'll be three or four ingredients. Why are they there? Sometimes there's a, you know, reason that's linked to how they manufacture it. And that's why when we work with customers, we do ask a lot of questions, partly because we're all sort of that type of people, but it's coming back to making sure we give the right solution for the right problem. So there's a lot of going back to basics. And I think customers at the minute tend to be more open-minded. You know, I've been to a couple of retailer events where, you know, they've got very strict guidelines of what they'll accept, what they don't accept. But what they're saying now is, you know, tell us about new things. It might not fit within our guidelines at the minute, but at least we know about them. So, you know, when they're looking further out, product development, etc., they can factor it in. And times change. I think there'll definitely be more open-minded. If you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always got. Really cheesy, but also very, very true. So, you know, who'd have thought, you know, 5-10 years ago we'd be making meringue from chickpea juice? It, you know, just wasn't a thing. But there's so many things now that are quite normal that weren't. So what customers are doing is they're pushing the boundaries a little bit. And I think, as Jonathan mentioned earlier, when he was talking about chocolate, once they've made some of these changes, they often, they're there, they stick because they're working. And it costs money to change back. So, you know, whether it's people's time, rewriting specifications, labels, etc., packaging. So actually, if things are working brilliant, let's look at something new rather than revisiting and moving back to what we did in the past.
Yeah. And it's that sort of curiosity and that open-mindedness that's driven the food industry for decades, really, isn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, listen, AAK will be at the Food Matters live event in London on the 3rd and 4th of June. If anybody comes over and sees AAK, visits you over there, what can they expect?
So we've got real life tasty examples of all the things we've talked about and more.
Fantastic news. Everyone will be delighted to hear.
Always good to try some products. We've got products that are reduced in sugar, reduced fat. We've taken dairy out. We've dairy replaced or extended the dairy. We've looked at that sort of thing. We've got some plant-based products. We've also got some more practical solutions. So the EN10 that Jonathan talked about earlier, there'll be product made with that. As well as our excellent sales team and my colleagues, customer innovation managers. So we've got experts sort of in different areas. So, you know, less is more. We can't be all things to all people in 2 days. But what if we don't have the answer there, we've got someone that will go and find the answer. So, you know, what we're encouraging is people to come and talk to us to understand what problems there are so we can marry them up with the right person to help move things forward.
Brilliant. And if anyone wants to go along to the Food Matters Live event in London, just visit foodmatterslive.com, click on the London event, and you can purchase tickets there. Jodie Spriggs and Jonathan Ayres, thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Anthony.